This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
That it raises, I think that's potentially more plausible. But my, I should stress that the agnostic atheism that I currently possess is quite unlike the one that I had maybe 4 years ago. Beforehand, it was very much the case that I essentially would have said, like, there aren't really any good reasons to think that God exists. Or at least those reasons that have been put forward, I think, don't work. Now, and that is to say, I was sat on the fence because there was just no breeze. There was just no breeze to push me onto one side. I was just sat there. Now, I'm still sat on the fence. I'm still an agnostic atheist of some description. But now it's more like there are equally forceful breezes pushing in opposite directions, right? So I do think that the contingency argument for the existence of God is a strong one. I do think that certain ontological arguments, you know, if there are certain quarrels like the one we're having now, can be resolved, like, is a good argument, is at least a good attempt to prove the existence of God. I think that the idea of an infinite regress probably does lead to unacceptable paradoxes. And so I would say that on its own, yes, like, I think there's good reason to think that there is a necessary unmoved mover. However, now the agnosticism is that that's the breeze pushing in one direction, but there's also now, I've thought a lot more and a lot more deeply about the breezes that would go in the opposite direction involving the problem of evil or divine hiddenness or animal suffering in particular and these kinds of things. The potential paradoxes involved in a necessary being, arguments about modal fatalism, for instance, that we were just talking about, that now push me in the other direction. So on its own, yeah, I do find more plausible on a surface level the idea of a necessary unmoved mover than the idea of an infinite regress of causes, if you ask about it in isolation.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As you guys saw there, Cosmic has come to a good realization, I believe, which shows criticality, possibly sincerity, shows open-mindedness on his behalf, that there are good reasons to believe in things like the contingency argument, which, as many of you know, I've written a book about and I'm doing my PhD about, because I personally believe it's something which is really, it's inescapable. The conclusion of it is inescapable almost. It's irrefutable, I believe. And it's been around, or forms of it have been around for thousands of years. It's been around since the Hellenistic period. And then it's been kind of revamped by Avicenna. And then it was taken again by Thomas Aquinas and Maimonides, Musa bin Mayun. And it was taken again by Leibniz. In different forms it's been elaborated upon and spoken about by different thinkers. And in my estimation, it's the least refuted argument for God's existence. Yes, there are other arguments that have been used, and these are kalam cosmological arguments, different types of kalam cosmological arguments. Of course, I've written a book called Kalam Cosmological Arguments, if you guys are interested. And of course, in this in the debate that I had with Cosmic, I brought the contingency argument up. Now, unfortunately, you know, we couldn't really get anything from him as to, by way of a refutation of the argument. Now we know he actually sees it as actually quite a powerful argument, which is good. I'm happy that he's come to this conclusion. It shows maturity on his behalf, educational maturity. I really hope he doesn't change his mind on this, and because that will show instability in cognitive processes, that one day you believe in this and that, you know, and that day you believe in that. I really hope that he sticks to his guns on this and he doesn't change his mind on at least his classification of his argument. And also I would say, well done to him, good man, that you've done that. The things that he's actually mentioned in terms of things that are pushing him in the other direction, or in his analogy or his language, the breeze that pushes the other way, things like divine hiddenness or hiddenness and the problem of evil, obviously it's been spoken about at length. We have videos on it. You can put my name on YouTube and put, for example, the problem of evil. I've spoken about it at length. And what is evil? Does it even exist on the atheistic paradigm? Does it even exist on the materialistic paradigm? And so on. What does it mean to say, well, does evil exist? Does that disprove in God? We've had these conversations, and of course, these are secondary considerations. In my opinion, these are secondary considerations. Once you've established the reality of a necessary existence, this is more powerful than anything else. And the fact that he's been able to do this is really, really good. And he's one step closer to the ultimate truth. And I really encourage him to do that, to move in that direction. Maybe what he said would not have been well received with his people and this, the people, supporters and, you know, subscribers and so on. But I really acknowledge that this is a brave step forward, and I hope he continues taking these brave steps forward. Well done to him. The other thing, the divine hiddenness, or the fact that God is hidden from the people. Why is he so hidden? This is something obviously we as Muslims don't believe in. We believe that kullu mawludun yuladu ala al-fitrati, that every human being is born on the predisposition in believing in God. And this is something I've mentioned, this I think even in the debate I mentioned, but I want to remind everyone of it. It's the fitra, or the predisposition, is something which has good evidence by way of anthropological evidence and sociological evidence. So for example, Justin Barrett, who in 2011, part of the Oxford Anthropological Society, spoke about us having an innate receptivity to believing in God, and that, you know, he'd done the study that children before socialization, that there's something which is kind of corresponds cross-culturally among children, which is that children do have this receptivity, this, in his words, innate receptivity to believing in a higher being. And I say that this is evidence to the contrary of, which can be juxtaposed with the idea of hiddenness, that God is hidden from us, hiddenness. We don't believe that that's correct. Now, that's one thing aside. I want him to continue thinking about these things. And obviously, animal rights are something which we as Muslims, we very much respect. There's a hadith of a woman who's a prostitute, okay, that she gave a dog water. And according to that, she was forgiven for her sins for doing that. Just because she gave a dog water, even though she's defiled herself in the most disgusting way possible by living, not the most disgusting way possible, doing that would be to be a polytheist, but in a very damning way. But that she gave that dog water would put her in among the people that are forgiven as a dog. And we believe that the Day of Judgment is a forum wherein which all of these kinds of injustices that have been done to animals will be kind of adjusted. And in fact, that is the day of recompense. And we have a beautiful hadith that talks about the two goats, one of them horned goat and the other one is not horned, and that the one that attacked one horned goat, the attacked the other goat without horns, will now get its retribution. So everything will be and yeah, it's true, like what we see today, and obviously we don't come to vegan conclusions, but what we see today by way of animal suffering and stuff like that, we think that that is against the sunnah, against Islam, you know, the cutting the beaks off the chicken and suffocating them and so on. This is, if the Prophet was around, he would surely have negated and refuted that kind of thing, especially when we have hadiths to that effect. For example, the woman who was torturing a cat, okay, and then she went to hell for that, we know that she's going to go to hell for that, because she, what kind of person does it take to really torture another innocent creature like a cat? So yeah, animal rights are important. Divine hiddenness, if you think of it in contradistinction with the fitra, you'll realize that the fitra, or the predisposition, is actually something which is super rational and precedes any rational argumentation, which is why I was thinking about this verse in the Quran, which is a really beautiful verse, and it came about in, and I thought about, I was pondering over it. It was a verse that said, قل إن كنتم في شك من ديني فلا أعبد الذين تعبدون من دون الله ولكن أعبد الله الذي يتوفاكم. You know, if you are in any doubt as to the religion of Islam, my religion, the Prophet Muhammad's religion, not just his religion, but the religion of Moses and Abraham and Jesus and those as well, then I don't worship other gods that are worshipped aside from God, but I worship God who brings us, like who takes away our lives and takes away our souls and takes away our consciousness. Yatawaffakum. This is such a powerful thing, because really, if you look at the six major world religions in the world today, you'll find that Islam is the only one with a conception of God which is also not only natural but rational as well. This is the reality. Like, we don't believe in a man God. We don't believe it's conceivable or intelligible or acceptable to believe that there's any human being is God, because it necessitates contradictions in terms. We don't believe in an animal God. We don't believe in a man God. You see what I mean? And so you've already stricken off Christianity, we've already stricken off Hinduism, a pantheistic notion of it. We've already stricken off pantheistic notions of Sikhism. So what are we left with? We're left with Judaism, right, which is a very exclusivist faith. What are we left with, right? Not much. Buddhism, which is not even a faith really in that sense. So what we say therefore is, keep looking not just to him, but to his followers as well. Keep looking, keep being critical, and you'll come to this conclusion. But just one more thing, be spiritual as well. If there is a necessary existence, then think of one thing. What relationship are we meant to have with this necessary existence? What relationship are we meant to have? And the answer we give is as follows. The relationship we are meant to have with the necessary existence is the relationship of submission. Everything else in creation is submitting to the will of the necessary existence. We must do the same. If we do the same, we will be at one with nature in the sense of the word, which is acceptable, which makes sense, because we'll be doing everything. We'll be doing things which everything else in creation is doing, which is submitting to the laws of the lawmaker. And so think. And I would ask everyone, really, if just make supplication. Because we believe, as Muslims, the Quran says, وَإِذَا سَأَلَكَ عِبَادِي عَنِّي فَإِنِّي قَرِيبٌ أُجِيبُ دَعْوَةَ الدَّاعِ إِذَا دَعَانِ. And if my slaves, it doesn't say the Muslims, if my slaves ask about me, then I am near. And I answer the caller of the call when he calls. So call unto God and ask Him to guide you. Because believe you me, if you do it, you will be successful. Assalamu alaikum.